Hello and welcome back to Paleo Party. We're in between seasons here, but while we're busy behind the scenes, we've put together some little bite-sized episodes to keep the party going. In these Paleo Party shorts, we'll be chatting to an amazing group of fossilologists and asking them to tell us a little bit about their favourite fossils. We have an amazing selection of ancient beasts that we're going to be talking about, and most of them are really obscure. So make sure you head over to our website, www.paleoparty.weebly.com, where you can find out lots of information and even photos of the critters that we're going to be chatting about. Anywho, let's get this party started and meet today's guest.
Hi everybody, my name is Valentina Rossi. I am a doctor in paleontology. I am working on the taphonomy of soft tissues of a really enigmatic and weird-looking fossil reptile from Italy. And I'm working with the Museum of Natural Sciences in Bolzano, northern Italy. And my favorite fossil is ammonite.
Oh, damn! Oh, okay, I wasn't expecting your favorite fossil to be an ammonite.
Yes.
Okay, so why is your favorite fossil an ammonite?
Right. So I think the easiest explanation is that those are really iconic fossils, and those were like the first fossils type that I was studying in books during my undergraduate. And also it's very iconic in Italy. Like, they're really easy fossil that you can easily find if you go to certain mountains, like, for example, the Apennines. So they're easy to spot and they are very pretty. And there are so many of them that they're just amazing to look at, for example, museum collections. So this is my easy answer.
I feel like you're playing to your audience as well, because like, cephalopods are my favorite. So
yeah.
I feel like you're just going in for brownie points. Okay, so my next question is, can you describe an ammonite? But I'm going to split it into two questions. Can you describe to me what ammonites normally look like when you find them? And then afterwards, maybe we should talk a little bit about what they looked like when they were alive.
Yes, okay. So when you find an ammonite in a rock, what you usually see is, most of the time, is like, it's the shell. So it's the outer shell of the animal, and it's a spiral. So for years, people, like in the past, for example, you know, people thought those were fossil snakes. So this is like a fun fact about ammonites. People have referred, you know, before actually calling them ammonites, they were called ammons. So, you know, resembling the horns of, you know, I think it was an Egyptian god or some mythological creature. But those are actually sea animals. So they were not sea snakes, but cephalopods. So kind of like a squiddy looking animal coming from the shell. But in the field, most of the time, like the majority of the time, you find only this spiral looking shell, which are sometimes extremely pretty with loads of ornamentations. Very beautiful fossils.
So my next question is, what was life like when they were around? But ammonites were around from like, what was it, 400 and something million years?
They appeared in the Devonian, which is a lot of time ago. Like, it's almost 400 something million years ago. And, you know, they were living in the oceans and in the sea. They disappeared after the Cretaceous extinction, basically. So yeah. Together with the dinosaurs, they all died. They have very long history in terms of geological time.
That's it. Dinosaurs get all of like the glory for that mass extinction, but the ammonites went extinct too, which makes me very
sad.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All of my questions are a bit void, really, because my next question is, where are they found? But ammonites are basically found everywhere.
Yes, they found everywhere, and you know, they are so, I would say probably they were so abundant. They also have a very quick evolution, right? So there are specific time periods where you would find specific species of ammonites. So those are so important, for example, for geologists and paleontologists, because we can track time once you are able to recognize different species. So it's really good for biostratigraphy and stratigraphy in general. But yeah, they found everywhere, from Russia, Australia, the States, Europe. Like, we have a lot of, like, a really big fossil record here in Europe, with loads of different species, beautiful shells.
So in England, ammonites are particularly associated with the south coast of England. So we have like Lyme Regis, Mary Anning, obviously very famously found lots of ammonites. We also, they're quite associated with the Yorkshire coast, so places like Whitby. Is there a similar place like that in Italy, like, that's sort of famous for its fossils, where people go to specifically fossil hunting?
Yeah, so in Italy, it's a little bit different, because technically, you cannot take the fossils. So there is a like very specific law that, you know, it's literally forbidden to dig for fossils unless you have a permission. So, you know, as a universities, you know, if you go for field work with your students and everything, that's all fine. But if you find anything that you realize is impressive, you should contact, you know, the institutions nearby, basically, to inform we found something that looks new. So technically, we can take anything. Like, for example, then there are places in, like, in the Alps, like the Dolomites, which are UNESCO sites, so you're not even allowed to have any tool with you. So, you know, if you find you with a hammer, they will ask you, what are you doing with the hammer in the Dolomites? Nothing. So, yeah, so technically, it's, yeah, it's highly regulated, I would say. So you can't, you know, even if you find a place where you can buy fossils, you should not encourage this unless there are permissions and things like that.
Okay, that's very interesting. I didn't know that. So that's a lesson for me as well.
One holiday in Italy, do not take the ammonites.
Yeah, exactly. <It's a trap. laughs> So... wow. Okay. So I wasn't expecting you to say ammonites. So all of my questions are like really specific.
This is fun because yesterday I you know, I said to my boyfriend, I'm going to do this interview for Paleo Party with Thomas. It's going to be fun because I'm pretty sure even you don't know what my favorite.
No, I didn't know.
And he was like, what's your favorite fossil? Yeah, I'm obsessed with ammonite. Literally, I draw them, I sketch them, you know, if I see anything that is spiral, I all, you know, always think about ammonites. It's an early obsession from my past.
Yeah, and I guess that's because of the link that you have with like your undergrad. And so, I mean, a good question then is, have you ever found an ammonite?
Yes, many. Yeah. No, it is actually, there is a particular type of rocks in Italy, in the central Italy, that is called in Italian, rosso ammonitico, which basically mean ammonitic red or something like that, literally translation, because it's packed full of ammonites. So it's really easy to spot them. And, you know, when we were doing the mapping, the geological mapping, again, it's critical that you find certain ammonites, because then again you will know exactly where you are in your geological record, and it's really easy then to orientate your geological maps and all of that. So yeah, I was lucky enough to find ammonites in my career. Yeah, and it's very unfortunate. Like I was actually going for an ammonite project, you know, I really wanted to do an ammonite project when I was an undergraduate, but then, you know, other things came up. And then I became obsessed with vertebrates, and here I am.
And I think the other thing about ammonites that so I'm obviously obsessed with cephalopods, but the one thing I really love about ammonites is how enigmatic they are. Like you said, they're so plentiful, and there's so many of them in the rocks, but we know so little about their soft parts because their soft parts just don't preserve.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's like one or two papers that suggest that they may have found soft parts, but it's... I don't want to say that it's questionable, because I think that some of the evidence is quite convincing, but also at the same time, we need more data to,
yes,
to have a much better understanding.
They're very rare to find. Yeah. So I remember, you know, again, first year undergraduates, there were all these reconstructions in, you know, the books, and we were discussing, okay, what's the orientation of the shell, for example, because there was many people actually oriented upside down in respect of how the actual animal was living. What was the animal? Because yes, it's something similar to, you know, modern cephalopod, but are we sure? Do we have any evidence? I remember having a long discussion with the professor in paleontology in my Italian institution, the length of these tentacles. Do they have tentacles? They were very long, they were very short, you know? So it was really interesting to see, you know, that we have fossil information, but we also have a lot of you know, missing parts that we hope to find in the fossil record.
Yeah. That's, I mean, it's so true. And we, like, for, like you said, for the longest time, like, we don't really know how many arms they had. Yeah. So, like, because they're very closely related to nautiluses, which have an external shell as well, and they have, like, 90 little tiny tentacles, whereas modern octopuses and squids have, like, between 8 and 10 limbs. And so I think the modern consensus is that these animals probably had 10 limbs because they were much more closely related to modern cephalopods. But even that, we're still... We're not 100% sure.
Yeah, I mean, we don't have an actual evidence.
Yeah.
You know, we all a hypothesis, which is cool. I mean, it would be great to find an actual complete ammonite with all the soft parts.
Oh, man. Sure.
That would be
That would be like my dream. Imagine that.
Yeah.
Can you tell me a little bit about how ammonite shells are preserved?
So usually, so in Italy, for example, most of the shell is gone. So we don't actually find evidence of the shell, but it's like an internal mold of the animal. But in other cases, in other places in the world, for example, I think it's Madagascar and also in some locality in Russia, you can actually find the shell preserved, which is this beautiful, like, pearl iridescence color, which is quite interesting. But my favorites of all are the ammonites that are preserved in pyrite, because they are gold, they are, most of them are 3D preserved, and they are extremely wonderful. So the shell in that case, again, I don't think it's actually preserved, but again, you have the mold of the animal, of the shell inside, that is preserved in pyrite, which is a different mineral from the original shell, which is calcium carbonate.
Yeah, and pyrite's super cool because it's like that gold color, isn't it? So people mistake it for gold all the time. So in English, we call it fool's gold. Do you have a similar thing in Italian?
Yeah, we have a similar definition in Italian as well, yeah.
No.
L'oro degli stolti.
Oh, say it again.
L'oro degli stolti.
And what does that translate to?
It's literally the gold fools.
Oh, no way. That's so interesting.
It's identical, yeah.
That's cool. Huh, that's weird. That's very interesting. I like that. I mean, I should start investigating other languages and find out what they call fool's gold.
Even the name of ammonites, it's very similar to Italian, which is ammoniti.
Did you know that in Germany, they used to grind up ammonites and feed them to their cows because they thought that it would make the cows' milk better?
Really?
Truth.
Okay, I didn't know about that fact. No.
I think that the ancient Romans believed that if you slept with an ammonite under your pillow, it would help you sleep.
Really? Okay, no. I didn't know all of this. Now it's even more interesting.
We're just teaching each other.
Teaching each other, yeah. No, I knew about, the sea snakes. And obviously, you know, I'm obsessed with Mary Anning as well. It's my inspiration for, you know, choosing paleontology.
Okay, well, let's talk about that then. You said that Mary Anning is like a big inspiration to you. Like, tell me a little bit about that. Why do you relate to Mary Anning so particularly?
I think, so when I was a child, like, again, like, we don't, at least where I lived, when I was a child, we don't find fossils on the beach. But we do find, obviously, shells, modern shells. And I was always drawn to, like, you know, have a walk with my parents and obviously pick up different shells. And then I would go home. And I don't know, in the past, we have this massive encyclopedia at home at my parents. So I would use those to actually find the name of the different shells, you know, to see some information about this. And I think I came to know paleontology later in my life. So I wasn't, for example, obsessed with dinosaurs. I didn't really care about them. You know, obviously I watched Jurassic Park, but again, I wasn't one of those super nerd, you know, that I go to paleontology because of dinosaurs. So I think I actually went to paleontology because of shells and, you know, because of this. And then I learned about Mary Anning. I discovered the, you know, through books and I don't know, I related to her, you know, the fact that obviously it was a different time. So I was impressed with, you know, the stories that goes around about her whole difficulties that she had as a scientist to actually be recognized as a scientist. So I don't know, I get that, you know, even though it's history, we still have kind of the same problem sometimes. So I don't know, I got inspired by how strong she obviously looks in the books and in the stories. And I thought, okay, if I want to be a paleontologist, I want to be like Mary Anning. I would love to live, you know, to have lived in Lyme ridges and just go hunting for fossils all day, find ammonites and ichthyosaurs and plesiosaurs and all those super cool fossils all day. Obviously, the times were difficult, so maybe modern Mary Anning would be better.
You could be the modern Mary Anning, I'm sure.
Modern time Mary Anning, yeah.
That would be absolutely fine. Did you know that when she was a kid, she got struck by lightning?
Yes.
That is one of the craziest stories. Like, no, like everyone talks about Mary Anning and the hardships, and she had a very difficult and very hard life. But I feel like not enough people talk about the fact that she got zapped by lightning.
Yeah, I mean, that's a true story, you know, because sometimes, right, is this actual what happened, or the house was struck by lightning? But yeah, that's amazing. I mean,
it's wild.
Superpowers, for sure.
Well, thank you very much for talking to us and taking the time to talk to us about your favorite fossil.
Thank you for inviting me. And surprise, everybody now knows what my favorite fossil is.
Yeah, I know. Everyone will find out that you're an invertebrate lover at heart.
Yes, yeah, deep down.
Thank you very much. I'll speak to you soon.
Bye.
Big thank you to our guest this week, and stay tuned as there are more Paleo Party shorts on the way. Remember, you can find details about the fossil on our website at www.paleoparty.weebly.com.
Paleo Party is an interactive podcast created by Thomas Clements, Christopher Dean, and Emma Dunn. This series of Paleo Party shorts is sponsored by a Paleontological Society Outreach and Education Grant. Our intro music is Voxel Revolution by Kevin MacLeod.